Happy Tuesday out there, Team 42. It's your skipper here at Darius Dell to present our macro minute for Tuesday, March 31st, 2026. Hope everyone's having a great week. So as always, we'll start with the executive summary from today's leadoff morning note. So let's dive right in. Today's key macro question is, did Taco Trump just permanently cede control of global energy markets to Iran? Part three. Our answer is this terrible outcome appears increasingly likely amid waning support among U.S. officials and U.S. allies for doing whatever it takes to reopen the Strait of Hormuz. Here are the most important things we learned today regarding the six key macro cycles that influence the momentum and dispersion within and across asset markets on a trend basis, starting with the growth cycle. The February JOLTS data supported our cooling housing and labor theme. The lowest private sector hires rate since June 2009 strongly supported our jobless recovery thesis. Private sector labor demand is contracting faster than total labor supply on a six-month annualized and year-over-year basis. In China, the March official PMI data supported our outlook for firming growth. In the Eurozone, the March European Commission survey data supported our outlook for moderating growth. In Japan, the February retail sales, February industrial production, and February jobs report generally did not support our outlook for firming growth. In the UK, the March Lloyd's business confidence, February retail sales, and final Q4 GDP data generally supported our outlook for moderating growth. Regarding the inflation cycle, Wall Street looks to close March with a relief rally amid reporting that President Trump signaled openness to ending the Iran conflict. POTUS and his advisors concluded that reopening the Strait of Hormuz would exceed a 4 to 6 week war timeline, prompting a strategic pivot back toward degrading Iran's naval and missile capabilities and away from reopening the Strait of Hormuz. Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Dan Kane, stated that U.S. forces are actively degrading Iran's defense industrial base, logistics, and supply chains to constrain drone and missile production, the three key goals initially outlined by the U.S. administration for initiating the conflict. Additionally, Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth asserted that diplomatic negotiations with Iran are, quote, gaining strength, and emphasizing that sustained U.S. military pressure is compelling Iran to make a deal. Sustained disruptions in the Strait of Hormuz imply persistently elevated oil prices with a likely upward trajectory over time. Elsewhere, the January Case-Shiller and FIFA home price data and February Zillow rent index data supported our cooling housing and labor theme. In the Eurozone, the preliminary March CPI data supported our outlook for firming inflation, while the February ECB CPI expectation survey data did not. In Japan, the March Tokyo CPI data did not support our outlook for accelerating inflation. The Tokyo CPI data are leading indicators for the nationwide CPI in Japan and signal incremental scope for expansionary fiscal policy by the reflation-oriented Takeuchi government and a slower pace of monetary policy normalization by the BOJ. In the UK, the March Lloyd's business confidence data supported our outlook for slowing inflation. Nothing actionable with respect to our Bayesian priors regarding the monetary policy cycle. With regards to the fiscal policy cycle, the U.S.'s NATO allies are increasingly resisting participation in the Iran conflict, exacerbating fractures within an already strained alliance. Spain restricted airspace to U.S. aircraft on Monday, Italy denied landing rights for U.S. military planes in Sicily, and Poland declined to relocate Patriot missile systems despite U.S. Requests to reinforce Middle East air defenses. President Trump criticized allies' non-participation, warning that the U.S. would not defend their interests amid fuel shortages tied to the Strait of Hormuz disruptions, stating that, quote, you'll have to start learning how to fight for yourself. The USA won't be there to help you anymore, just like you weren't there for us. President Trump signaled out France as being very unhelpful in a separate post following U.S.-Israel strikes degrading Iran's military infrastructure and leadership, adding that, quote, the USA will remember. And the reason we put this in the fiscal policy session, because ultimately what less cohesion within NATO implies is more of a desire. It's going to be more of a forcing function to get the NATO allies to increase their defense spending and their infrastructure spending. Recall that last year, President Trump successfully negotiated an increase in NATO's defense and infrastructure targets from 2% to 3.5% for defense and an additional 1.5% of GDP's worth for infrastructure. So by 2030, NATO is going to go from roughly 2% of GDP and expenditures on defense on average across the NATO alliances to 3.5% of GDP on defense and an additional 1.5% of GDP on defense-related infrastructure. That's an enormous capital call for the European economies, which, by the way, are the US's largest net international investment creditor from the perspective of the treasury bond market. And so if these economies are going to be forced, because the NATO alliance is breaking down, to invest more in their own defense and more in their own infrastructure, and ultimately more in their securing energy products for themselves out of the Middle East, then ultimately that just means the flow of capital that's been supporting the treasury market for decades is going to start to reverse at the margins. And that's one of the core features of our core research view, which is again, the geopolitically driven supply demand imbalance of the treasury bond market, which again has been our core research view since the summer of 2023. So this certainly does not help ameliorate that is supply demand disequilibrium. Getting into the liquidity cycle, accelerating private equity dividend recapitalization signal investor concerns regarding AI disruption are increasingly weighing on the liquidity cycle. Private equity backed firms issued $94 billion in U.S. leverage loans and high yield bonds in 2025 to finance shareholder distributions, elevating credit risk throughout the industry and the economy per Moody's. Dividend recapitalizations have accelerated as private equity firms seek liquidity amid constrained exit pathways driven by macro uncertainty that is suppressing M&A and IPO activity. Approximately $50 billion or 53% of dividend recapitalization proceeds were distributed to sponsors in 2025 versus only $33 billion or 34% in 2024. The remainder is allocated to debt refinancing and general corporate uses. So very clearly, we continue to see the lack of liquidity out there from the suppressed M&A and IPO activity, you know, forcing these private equity firms and private credit firms to have to go tap debt markets in order to pay themselves and or pay their LPs. And so, you know, this is something that is tenuous, and it's confirmation that, it's incremental confirmation that the liquidity cycle isn't exactly what we'd like it to be as investors. And very clearly, Iran removing petroleum products from the global markets is causing issues from a liquidity perspective as well. Recall that the Gulf Coast economies are not generating the same level of revenue and profits they need to continue supporting global asset markets, in so much that the international investment surplus economies over in Asia are not able to generate the same level of economic output they need to generate household savings, corporate profits, and foreign exchange reserves, which are all recycled into global capital markets. So we're having, this removal of the petroleum products from the global market is essentially a removal of liquidity from global markets on a lag from the perspective of the dollar recycling that we tend to see across the global financial markets. Nothing actionable with respect to our Bayesian priors from the positioning cycle. Continue reviewing to learn whether our institutional grade risk management overlays, KISS and Dr. Mo, are evolving their signals in response to these or anticipated fundamental dynamics. Transition to our 42 micro dashboard. As always, we wrap up with a question from our community. This one's titled, "Are the markets missing the significance or Hormuz?" Says, "Hi, Skipper. I'm hearing the closure is a massive disruptor for much of the world in terms of oil, LNG, fertilizer, helium, and that we're weeks away from critical supply shortages. The 10-year spiking and gold selling off might be signaling a scramble for liquidity. Thankfully, you've got us in a very safe stance." I don't have us in a very safe stance. KISS and Dr. Mo have us all in a very safe stance. So let me be clear about that. It doesn't look like the U.S. has any good off-ramps, and the Iranians are keen to bring on the pain. Russia must be using the situation as payback for the proxy war in Ukraine. Anything else we should think about here, and what should we prepare for and pray doesn't? Best regards. Excellent question. This is what we've been talking about for weeks now, which is, the most of the markets are focused on the this being a current account issue in terms of the removal of these petroleum products, in terms of hurting the GDPs of the global economy, hurting, for example, Taiwan, who needs the petroleum products from the Middle East to help manufacture chips, both from an energy and also input standpoint. And we know Taiwan's home, I want to say 98% of advanced semiconductor manufacturing. So, this whole interconnected web of petroleum products emanating from the Middle East and being shipped across the world is a big deal. And to me, I've been saying that everyone's focused on the current account. The capital account is by far the much bigger story here in terms of the removal of all that revenue, profits, household savings, and foreign exchange reserves, which are all getting get recycled into global capital markets. And so, in my opinion, this is a function of time. This is an x-axis problem, not a y-axis problem. As long as the Strait of Hormuz remains effectively closed, We're not, you know, it's, you know, the flows that go through the Strait are significantly reduced relative to what's normal, which is historically, thinking about crude oil, is about 20% of global crude oil products flowing through there. As long as that remains effectively closed, we're going to have a liquidity crisis. We are in a liquidity crisis. That doesn't mean that, you know, Taco Trump can't, you know, say what he needs to say to get the markets up over on a 1 to 2 or 3 day time horizon. But the reality is, as long as Strait of Hormuz remains closed, there's nothing that any official can do to stop the liquidity crisis from continuing to devolve. So that's our, that's been our core belief and our opinion. That's why we're in a risk-off inflation market regime. And that risk-off inflation market regime is going to persist as long as the Strait of Hormuz remains effectively closed, period. Period. If you have if you disagree with that, then good luck to you and your portfolio. So we'll wrap it up there. Actually, we'll wrap it up with a comment from one of our other members in our global investor community. This one says, I wanted to speak up for another subset of this community, the chronically underinvested and risk averse. So, and the reason I'm bringing this up, sorry, it's kind of a hard transition there. The reason I'm bringing this up is because we are, you know, we are in a risk-off inflation market regime. We believe that the risk-off inflation market regime will continue to snowball, to devolve, as long as the Strait of Hormuz remains effectively closed. I have no idea how long the Strait of Hormuz is going to remain effectively closed, but I do know that as long as we're correct on these capital account dynamics, which we have been correct on the capital account dynamics, and as we remain correct on those capital account dynamics, then this risk-off inflation market regime will devolve into a crash, and if not a crash, in a global financial crisis. And so that's been our core, one of our core beliefs as it relates specifically to this, to this conflict. And so I'll just bring it back to the comment here, because I think it's an important comment in the context of that backdrop. It says, I want to speak up for another subset of this community, the chronically underinvested and risk averse. My family has saved and budgeted our way to nearing seven figures in liquid net worth with a paid off home without stock market exposure. I've sat through the 2000 drawdown and vowed to never do it again. I jumped out of all stocks after the recovery. I stayed out of the stock market, even though I was watching the exact low on the SPX. It jumped 10% off the low and began, and being gun shy, I thought maybe a retrace or a better chance. Oh, I assume they mean would surf. I thought they thought that maybe a retrace or a better chance to enter. That's my assumption there. Unfortunately, I stayed on the sidelines, second guessing. I remained there all these years, and I'm now at 42 macro, because it is only one of two services that I know of that worries more about the drawdowns than the returns. I dipped my toe back into stocks in my retirement account and lost on this last de-risking signal in my Roths, where I have more products. My GLDM involvement overwhelmed the stock market exposure, so I'm absolutely positive. Overall, I'm down several $1,000, but I am out of the recent uncertainty. Now I know I can and will get back in. If I weren't for 42 macro, I would not be waiting to buy back into stocks. I would just be happy had I never engaged in reinforcing the idea that it is better to be on the sidelines. I don't think I am the only one. So thanks. So really grateful for this positive commentary, because it reminds me to remind everyone else that, hey, Kirsten and Dr. Moore are excellent at chopping off the left side of the left tail of the distribution so that we can create a positively skewed distribution in our portfolios in a way that allows us to compound returns from higher net asset values, which allows compounding to work better because of the exponential growth function. And so KISS does a really good job at that. But what it also does, KISS and Dr. Mo, what they also do is help investors to get back long after the crisis occurs. You know, it's not just, it's one thing to avoid left tail risk in your portfolio, but if you don't have any right tail risk, then you're never going to achieve your strategic investment objectives, which is to retire on time and comfortably. Risk works in both directions. You know, you're concerned about downside risk when you're, you know, accumulating assets, but you should also be concerned about upside risk as you age, because if you don't accumulate enough assets, then ultimately you're going to have a very delayed and not so comfortable retirement. 42 macro exists to help retail investors use the same tools and processes that institutional investors, what we would consider to be the world's best institutional investors, help them use those same tools and processes and frameworks to achieve their strategic investment objectives, which I have long argued throughout my career that if you're a retail investor, your only goal should be to retire on time and comfortably. Way too many of you guys listening to me talk right now have so many other goals. You want to trade copper. You want to do this. You want to do that. You want to do this. You want to short that. You want to do this. You want to do that. You all want to succumb to your action biases and your illusions of validity that, you know, it's okay to do all this stuff. But if you optimize your investing habits for achieving your strategic investment objective, and your strategic investment objective is correct in that you want to retire on time and comfortably, then you're going to have phenomenal results, particularly when you are using systems like KISS and Dr. Mo, which are very similarly designed the way that many of the top hedge funds that charge 3 and 30 for their services across the global buy side are organized. So we'll wrap it up there. Terry's still here presenting our macro minute for Tuesday, March 31st, 2026. Everyone have a wonderful day out there. Best of luck. We'll catch back here tomorrow. Cheers.
Disclaimer, 42 Macro does not provide, and no portion of our content purports to be, individualized or specific investment advice. And 42 Macro does not provide investment advice to individuals. All information provided by 42 Macro is general in nature and is made without regard to individual levels of sophistication or investment experience, investment preferences, objectives or risk parameters, and without regard to the suitability of the content for individuals or entities who may access it. No information provided by 42 Macro should be construed as an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any security or investment vehicle, nor should it be construed as tailored or specific to you or consumer thereof. You understand and agree that our content does not constitute specific recommendations of any particular investment, security, portfolio, transaction, or strategy, nor does it recommend any specific course of action is suitable for any specific person or entity or group of persons or entities. At any point in time, the employees of 42 Macro may own a portion of or all the ETF securities discussed in 42 Macro research content. 42 Macro research content is based upon information from sources believed to be reliable. 42 Macro is not responsible for errors, inaccuracies, or omissions of information, nor is it responsible for the accuracy or authenticity of the information upon which it relies.